with a time in our country when things are not easy. To be fed is a problem. We are homeless and naked. So we have to go to the midis for us to find jobs. Yeah, we found ourselves into slavery. They will beat us, they will kill us, there is no one to help us. We are walking without payment, there is no one to help us. They don't care for what we eat, they don't care for where we sleep. So please understand us by and by.
You've just been listening to Lucy, the lead singer of a group of domestic workers in Lebanon called the United Sisters. Lucy was singing about the hardships of being a domestic worker in Lebanon, and that is our show today on The Stream. The way that foreign domestic workers are treated or mistreated in Lebanon. Let me introduce you to our panel. They're going to unpack the situation for us. Rula, Aline, Aya, so good to have you here in The Stream. Rula, please say hello and introduce yourself to our international audience. Tell them who you are and what you do.
Thank you for having me here. I am Rula Segayer, the Strategic Program Coordinator of the Domestic Workers Federation, which is a global federation representing over 590,000 domestic workers around the world.
Nice to have you. Aline filmed the video that you just watched there of the United Sisters. Aline, welcome to The Stream. Please introduce yourself to our viewers.
Hi, everyone. My name is Aline Deschamps. I'm a French Thai photographer, and I'm normally based in Beirut, where I focus on subjects of migration, exile, and cultural heritage.
Good to have you. And Aya, welcome to The Stream. Please introduce yourself to our global audience.
Thanks very much for having me. My name is Aya Mersoup, and I'm the Lebanon researcher for Human Rights Watch, also based in Beirut.
All right, ladies, guests, good to have you. We have so much expertise on our show today. Please use it. If you're on YouTube, the comment section is right here. Ask questions, share your concerns. I'll do my best to get all of that into today's program. I am going to start with a really disturbing video. And this video is of a domestic worker being dragged through the streets of Lebanon. It went viral last week. Have a look at my laptop here. You will see exactly why. Rula, when you saw this video, this is not the first time we've seen domestic workers being abused on video from Lebanon. But when you saw this video, and there has been some campaigning about we need to be looking at what is happening in a system that allows foreign workers to come to a country and then have no labour rights whatsoever. So you saw that video and you thought what?
Absolutely. What you are mentioning is the key, actually, to the dismantlement of the kafala. We frequently think about it as if it were a labor law, but in fact, it's an immigration system. So you have the branch of the government that is responsible for the policing and surveillance, which is the Ministry of Interior, governing employment relationships. It is not meant to govern the welfare of the workers. So such videos are frequently observed, and whenever we see them, there is a little bit of media attention around the subject. However, because it is the survivor herself or the victim herself that needs to file a complaint, frequently domestic workers are not able to do so because they fear the repercussions of such an action, and the perpetrator remains unpunished. So we call for certain litigative processes that would be more accessible to domestic workers in order to access justice, something that is not available for them today.
Aya, often when we talk about the kafala system, we talk about domestic workers in Lebanon, the pushback is that was a bad person. That was an irresponsible behaviour. Not everybody abuses their domestic workers. I just want to share this tweet with you here. This is from Osman. He knew we were doing this show. He says, the reason why there is so much abuse in Lebanon with domestic workers is because they don't see domestic workers as human beings. Aya, your thoughts?
I mean, I think that there are problems on multiple levels. A lot of people, when they see videos like this really awful video that we just saw, tend to just dismiss it as, you know, a bad employer or, you know, a few bad apples in the system. However, the message that we're really trying to get across is that the system itself is inherently abusive. So even if an employer is a good employer, they are still participating in an exploitative and abusive employer worker relationship whereby workers are denied most basic rights, and that's considered normal. So things like forced confinement in the home, things like confiscating the identity document of the worker as soon as she comes into Lebanon, things like not allowing them any rest days or even rest hours after and being expected to be on call all the time. These are things that are considered normal under this kafala system in Lebanon. And those are, you know, less severe than the abusive video that we just saw, but still make up a very exploitative and very abusive system that leads to such, you know, such really awful videos. And I want to pick up on something that my colleague Rilla just mentioned about the lack of access to justice for migrant domestic workers. I mean, this case, what happened in the video, I mean, the video just made the rounds on social media. It generated a lot of outrage, and immediately the perpetrator of the abuse was called in for interrogation. However, less than 24 hours later, he was released, having only paid a small fine. And then the worker was deported a few days later. Unfortunately, this is not unique. We've witnessed time and time again the way that the justice system is not responsive to the needs of migrant domestic workers, from the very high barriers that they place on the ability of migrant domestic workers to file complaints in the first place, to then the fact that most of these procedures are carried out in Arabic, languages that not all migrant domestic workers understand, as well as often without the presence of any lawyer representing the migrant domestic worker. And we did a Human Rights Watch actually did a study of over 100 cases involving migrant domestic workers, either as plaintiffs and defendants. And the results were quite shocking. We found that except in cases of very, very severe physical, verbal, or sexual abuse that's backed by overwhelming medical evidence, courts usually did not convict employers of any criminal charges, including for forced confinement, for non-payment of wages, for verbal abuse. And even in the very, very, very small number of cases where the courts did convict an employer of criminal charges due to physical abuse of the migrant domestic worker, the punishments were not commensurate with the gravity of the crime.
Right.
So, for example, just to mention one case that still, you know, is in my mind many years later. There was a case of an employer who beat her worker within sight of the worker's embassy. The worker then fainted and was taken to a hospital. In the hospital, the doctor saw signs of beating on her body as well as very big bruises. And a criminal court sentenced the employer to 15 days in jail. That was it. And that was heralded as a success in Lebanon at the time because it did result in a conviction of the employer.
Aileen, I want to bring in the work that you've been doing, the documentary work, the documentary photographs that you've been doing with foreign domestic workers in Lebanon, because to me it seems like there's a huge empathy gap between the way that they are treated and the way they should be treated. There were three pictures in particular you wanted to show us. So I'm going to show them to our audience and you can tell us the stories and why you wanted our audience to see these pictures. Let's start.
Okay.
On the beach.
With pleasure. So that picture is actually kind of like among the last ones of the series. It is after a month of documenting these women. The one on the beach was actually the first day where they learned that Beirut had a beach called Ramnat El Baida and that they could actually go out there to just have some, you know, like fresh air, have some like space, go dancing and just have fun. That was the first day of holiday for them. And for me, that was a magical day. for me, it is also, it really captures really well the spirit of the series, I'm Not Your Animal, because it translates the strength, the resilience, but also the beauty of this woman. And I think this is something that is so important to show as well. Yeah.
That's why I wanted to start on the beach, because the sleeping quarters are what you would expect to see when people are not treated like real human beings. Let's take a look at the sleeping quarters. Tell us more.
So this one was actually taken in the neighborhood of Tariq al-Jadide, which is an impoverished neighborhood in Beirut. And when I met those women, they were in a similar house, and there were 15 of them living together, and, you know, basically like sleeping with a few mattresses on the floor. By the time I was taking this picture, they were actually helping and rescuing more and more women every day from the streets, because at that time, in 2020, there was the start of the economic collapse in Lebanon. And so a lot of employers were dropping, like, their employers on the street. They were dumping them in front of their embassies. And so those girls were just roaming the streets in order to find a shelter. And Lucy, among other women, were picking them up one by one to, you know, find them a home. And so there were 15 at the beginning, but, you know, at the end of the project, there were like over 50 in like several houses. That's to tell you how increasing the numbers were of Israeli Union women that were rescued.
Rula, I want to play you the story and the comment from a domestic worker called Julia. She sent us this a little bit earlier, talking about the circumstances in Lebanon, the economic crisis in Lebanon that has made her situation even worse. Here she is, Rula, and then if you could respond immediately off the back of the video.
In this time, the domestic worker in Lebanon is a very, very, almost of us is very, very vulnerable situation. Even though we don't have the foods to survive every day, it's very difficult because of the crisis, economic, blast, and COVID. These things is making us in vulnerable situation. So we don't have even the foods, we don't have a salary, we don't have money, we don't have anything.
Absolutely. This has made a bad situation even worse. Domestic workers have been precarious because also they occupy various identities that are precarious in the power hierarchies of this world. They are migrant women. They are women from the global south. They are indigenous women. They are sometimes the sole breadwinners for their families. They are mothers. There are multiple things that would put barriers in front of access to livelihood in front of them. Since last year, which was the first time that we've discussed the Kenyan women's protest in Lebanon, today they are again protesting in front of their consulate in order to be taken back home and to be repatriated. So the situation keeps getting worse and it is not getting better in any provisions. And the domestic work sector in general, as I had mentioned, we have the Ministry of Interior, which is the policing and surveillance branch of the government, governing the immigration processes for blue-collar workers to come into the country and occupy these jobs. And domestic work is not governed by any law, so there isn't a provision that would grant accessibility to any form of litigation of justice. So they are left alone, and we have witnessed an increase in layoffs, an increase in racism and xenophobia, domestic workers and migrant workers being blamed for the crisis at large, being treated as vectors of the virus. We have also seen domestic workers and migrant workers being lynched and dying deaths that are deemed unnatural and sometimes dubbed as suicides. What I would like to say is that under the kafala system, any death is the responsibility of the kafala system, and which we should all be accountable for if we do not reform the system. Because if your only way out of a job, if you're not able to quit, if you're not able to leave your employer, and your employer is able to charge you with absconding, which is language that we borrow from the slavery, then if your only way out is by exiting life itself, then of course it is responsibility of the kafala system that is not providing any litigative processes or social protections for the workers that it should seek after.
So I have a couple of comments here on YouTube. I'm going to share these comments with you, Aya. The kafala system is a system of guardianship and its sponsorship, for instance, where you have a contract with your employer. That is all you have. They may loan you out to a relative. They may decide you have to work 7 days a week. You have no normal labour protections. There has been efforts to change that, but that's the situation, the practical situation right now. So on YouTube, we have Augustine asking this. Why single out Lebanon? The kafala system is used in all Middle Eastern countries. It's a whole continent where domestic workers are and can be abused. MC says, why is this system still used, not just in Lebanon, but throughout the Middle East? What did the International Labour Organization do to address this issue? Aya, go ahead. This question about it's not just Lebanon, and your response is what?
It's true that it's not just Lebanon, and that, you know, Human Rights Watch regularly documents the abuse of migrant domestic workers in various countries across the Middle East. However, Lebanon is becoming an outlier on this issue because countries such as Gulf countries, as well as countries like Jordan, have started implementing reforms. Now, whether those reforms go far enough, you know, we don't think that they do. But Lebanon is an outlier on this issue in that there is no law governing migrant domestic workers' presence in the country. Migrant domestic workers are excluded from the labor law, and there isn't another law governing their presence. Only Lebanon and Oman, two Middle Eastern countries that receive a large number of migrant domestic workers and still don't have any law protecting or regulating the presence of migrant domestic workers in the country. So all that they have, as you mentioned, in terms of legal documents, is this contract that they sign with their employer. Often this contract is only presented in Arabic, so migrant domestic workers are signing a contract that they cannot read or understand. And this contract itself fails to meet international standards in that it doesn't adequately prevent cases of forced labor and human trafficking and other kinds of abuses that we document on a regular basis. So, yes, abuses occur elsewhere, but Lebanon is more and more becoming an outlier by stubbornly refusing to implement any changes to the kafala system that would improve the lives of migrant domestic workers in the country.
Aline, go ahead.
Yeah. I think it's very important to talk about Lebanon as well, because besides of what Aya has been mentioning, the current economic crisis right now makes completely irrelevant the fact of even bringing migrant domestic workers. Because let's say that, like, you know, normally if they are paid, they will be paid $200. But now, due of the immense devaluation, they will not, that their salary, if they will be paid, will not even be worth like $30 or $40. So there is absolutely no point for them to be coming in Lebanon. And yet we still see migrant workers coming legally or illegally within Lebanon. And I think that's one thing that is worth really headlining in comparison to the rest of the countries where the kafala system exists.
I want to bring in...
Absolutely, and I would also like to just comment on the second question,
go ahead.
If possible.
Yeah, please.
So the reasons that keep the kafala system running. So in Lebanon, there is a compound crisis, but the way that we formulate our problems also sheds light on the solution. And frequently, we think of the kafala system as something that is happening in the Gulf countries and in the Middle East as something that is purely cultural. However, there is an economic component behind this entire system. This system is beneficial for the 1% that own everything, that are the people that we fight in every country, pretty much. So, for example, not only does the government save money on not creating institutions for care, institutions that would provide health care for the elderly or for people with disability or for children or in general, but it also displaces this labor on domestic workers that are not protected by any provision whatsoever. So it is not spending money on them. And not only that, but it also gets paid through the system because recruitment agencies make money. The visa provisions, the insurance that domestic workers and employers pay, all of this brings income within the government and within recruitment agencies and even to middlemen. So it creates employment possibilities and it creates pathways towards creation of or generation of income. But these pathways are not inclusive. And also the country does not allow for domestic workers to unionize. For example, we see unions, even for employers of domestic workers. For example, in Lebanon, we have an organization that works on the protection of the rights of the family and the worker, which represents women employers of domestic workers. And we have a union that represents the interests of recruitment agencies, but domestic workers are not allowed under the law to be able to have one voice and represent themselves and be parts of these negotiations that are crucial to their livelihood and safety and security.
Okay, Rula, I'm going to bring in some more voices of domestic workers, or at least former domestic workers. Have a look here on my laptop. This organisation was set up for domestic workers in Lebanon, with domestic workers in Lebanon, so their own solutions to their own challenges. Earlier, we had a word with Sigureda, who is the deputy director of this organisation. This is what she told us.
Many employers are keeping those workers inside their house without paying their salary, and those girls being stuck in the house for years, and there is no one to protect or to send them home. Even if they don't have money to pay for those workers, they should have sent them home, which is they are not doing that. And as all we know, they are not even caring about the domestic workers. And I don't think this will change, because it's becoming worse day by day, not having money and everything collapsing.
So Sigureda says, I don't think this will change. And then earlier, Julia said, I'm in a rubbish situation. Aline, from your interaction with the domestic workers, were they able to organise themselves and say, OK, we have to fix this for ourselves?
Of course, they had no choice, absolutely. Not only were they relying on themselves, but I guess most of the women also relied on other migrant domestic workers. So, for example, the women that I followed from Sierra Leone were in contact with Igna Ligna, were in contact with other women from other home countries, so they could help each other. So what was really important for me as well was to show this bond of solidarity, meaning that in a state of oppression from the state, in a state of oppression from the employers, those women could get help from other migrant domestic workers, and that was really important. Is that going to change, or do they see that the situation is going to get better? Unfortunately, I can say that from what I've seen, that they have no choice. You know, it's a very bittersweet feeling. Like, the ones who can go home because of repatriation go there with a really bittersweet feeling, knowing that they will bring a lot of shame, knowing that they will bring a lot of indebtment because they are coming back home with empty pockets.
I want to bring in two extra thoughts here. One is from Asma, who's on YouTube, just taking on from where you
of
left
course.
Off. Asma says, what better ways are there to put an end to this menace? And then earlier, Salma, who works in advocacy for this area, asked this and suggested this. Here she is.
Things will change only if the government holds employers accountable for set practices and to put in a system that undoes the wrongs that migrant workers have had to live through in the country for decades.
2 years ago, I was speaking to Rula about domestic workers in Lebanon and their plight. Rula, will I be in 2 years' time talking to you again about domestic workers in Lebanon and their plight? In a sentence, wrap us up.
I hope that we would be talking about a brighter future or some provisions that are taken by the government in order to improve the lives of domestic workers. One way to do this is to dismantle the Article number 7 from the Lebanese labor law that excludes domestic workers from the labor code. And that would be one way forward.
All right. So that's some work to be done. Rula, Aline, Aya, and YouTube commenters, thanks so much for being part of today's show. I appreciate you. I will leave you with the voices of the United Sisters.
We are calling on you, and we are calling on human rights. We are calling on nations that they care for our life. We are young girls, we are suffering, we are dying in the Middle East. So please understand us by and by.